You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, seemingly none.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved.
Hi there, and welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. I am Jen Zaman, the engineer, and I am in for Judy Ansel, who was out on assignment this week. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers 15 and Construction and General Laborers Local 1290. Since 1865, the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Crafts Workers has represented the most highly skilled trowel trades craft workers across the United States and Canada. Through local union programs, BAC Local 15's apprenticeship and training system is widely recognized for producing highly skilled craft workers. Safety and training are two of BAC's top priorities as well. Build with BAC. Quality is remembered long after price is forgotten. And Construction and General Laborers Local 1290 represents over 2,300 men and women in the construction industry throughout Kansas and western Missouri. And we thank our underwriters for their contributions to the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. On tonight's show, last month, a diverse group of workers at Challenge Manufacturing near the airport showed Kansas City that even in the era of Trump, you can win a strike. You can find out about it this week. And then, from male to female, how one engineer found out about discrimination once she lost her male privilege. In the news, Equal Pay Day, nothing to celebrate. And Labor 2 petitions for a citizen's veto of right to work. Our feature at the end of the show is Safety First with Mary Aereo. And now for the news.
News from our side, April 6, 2017. Missouri Governor Eric Greitens has hired Anna Hui to head the Missouri Department of Labor and Industrial Relations. Hui has been director of the State of Illinois Labor Department, appointed by union-busting Governor Bruce Rayner. Before her Illinois stint, Hui was Associate Deputy Secretary of Labor for the U.S. government under Labor Secretary Elaine Chao during the administration of George W. Bush. Chao is currently Secretary of Transportation under Trump and is married to Senator Mitch McConnell. After her Bush years, Hui worked at the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. Tuesday was Equal Pay Day, not a big cause for celebration for working women or their families. The day marks how long into the year 2017 women had to work to equal the average pay paid to men in 2016. The Partnership for Women and Families reports that the pay gap on average is $10,470 a year, since women earn about 80% of men. It's worse for women in Missouri and Kansas, where they make 78 and 77 cents for every dollar a man makes, and ranking 34th and 37th among all states. If women made as much as men, families would benefit. They could dump that second job and be home for dinner or pay the rent on time. Their partners instead might dump the second job and spend more time with the kids. The pay gap is much worse for women of color. African-American women make only 63% of what white men make, and Latinas make a little over half as much at 54%. Luckily, Ivanka Trump tweeted on Tuesday that she supports equal pay for women, even though her daddy last week revoked the Obama Fair Pay and Safe Workplace rules that denied federal contracts to workplaces that discriminated against women. A federal appeals court on Tuesday ruled that the 1964 Civil Rights Act barring discrimination in the workplace by gender covers lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender workers. In an 8-3 decision, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, which covers Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, said, "Discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is a form of sex discrimination." The judges went on to say it would require considerable calisthenics to remove the sex from sexual orientation. The case involved Kimberly Hively, a part-time professor who claimed she was denied a full-time post at Ivy Tech Community College in South Bend, Indiana, because she is a lesbian. She said the college never even interviewed her for a full-time position. NBC News reported Greg Nevins of the LGBT rights group Lambda Legal, which represented Hively, praised Tuesday's decision, saying, "Federal law is catching up to the public opinion. 90% of Americans already believe that LGBT employees should be valued for how well they do their jobs, not who they love or who they are." Chief Judge Diane Wood said the court's conclusion was based on previous Supreme Court decisions involving employment discrimination and gay rights, as well as the common sense reality that it is actually impossible to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation without discriminating on the basis of sex. Last month, by a 2-1 vote, a federal appeals panel in Atlanta reached the opposite conclusion in the case of Jamaica Evans, who claimed she was targeted for termination because she didn't carry herself in a traditional woman manner in her job as a hospital security officer. Congress has repeatedly refused to extend the law prohibiting discrimination to people who are LGBT, so now it will probably be up to the Supreme Court. The Missouri House has passed a bill that would repeal the state's prevailing wage law for public construction projects. Prevailing wage laws prevent the state from driving down wages of construction workers because it and the cities, school districts, and other public bodies are such big purchasers of construction and maintenance. Such laws in the past were supported by both parties, but now repealing prevailing wage has become a priority for Republicans in many states. Those prevailing wages are set for each construction trade on a county-by-county basis. They're determined based on voluntary wage surveys submitted by contractors working in each county, but when no wages are reported, the union rate for that trade is used. The repeal passed the House last Thursday with an 89-60 vote. It now moves to the Senate. Supporters of the bill say it would save the state money. Opponents argue that repeal will bring low-wage employers, many from out of state, who pay poverty wages and no benefits. Ultimately, repeal will cause shoddy construction and increase costs of public assistance while decreasing tax revenues. So why pass it? It appears the real reason is because it will hurt the power of unions. The state Senate is conducting hearings this week on repealing prevailing wage.
And for our last story, St. Louis Post reported last Friday that Missouri Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft approved the wording of a petition that would put Missouri's right-to-work law in front of voters for an up or down vote. This rarely used citizen's veto could prevent right-to-work from going into effect if backers can present 90,000 signatures or 5% of voters from two-thirds of the state's congressional districts on petitions by August 28th, which is the date right-to-work is supposed to be implemented. Jake Hummels, the secretary treasurer of the Missouri AFL-CIO, said, "I think we have plenty of time to get that done. If labor succeeds in getting the signatures, then voters will be able to vote on right to work in a statewide referendum in 2018. The tactic was last used in 1982 when Missouri voters rejected a law that would have allowed larger trucks on the state's major highways. Of the 26 referenda called since 1914, voters acted against the legislature's wishes 24 times. Hummel said there's a danger in using this tactic. The danger is obviously that you spend this much time and effort on a campaign, but it's not a constitutional change, so the legislature can come back after the vote and do it all over again." Meanwhile, state lawmakers in Jefferson City are weighing new rules to make the initiative process more difficult. Some proposals will require petitions to be filed between January 31st, following each general election, and 9 months before the election at which the proposed measure would appear on the ballot. Petition circulators would have to reside and be registered to vote in Missouri and would also have to display a badge identifying whether they're a volunteer or if they're compensated. The bills also prohibit paying circulators based on how many signatures they obtain. Additionally, they require a $500 fee for every petition filed to be refunded only if the petition qualifies for the ballot, and 14-point Times New Roman font on each page. The news tonight was read by Ariana Eckel, and I'm Jen Zaman, and coming up next is Ariana Eckel talking about the Challenge Manufacturing Strike.
Good evening, and welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Ariana Eckel. I am a fourth-year apprentice wireman of IBEW Local 124. This evening, I'm going to be sharing with you some interviews and audio that I recorded at the Challenge Manufacturing UAW Local 710 strike. I have taken a lot of the footage, removed the audio from the video, and sewn it all together into tonight's show. So here we go.
coming to you live from a picket line, UAW in Kansas City.
This is corporate greed, everybody. Corporate greed, live in front of Challenge Manufacturing, trying to change the five owners of the company for refusing to give the workers a fair and equal contract. Also, we are concerned about your health and safety activities in the plant. We are also concerned about the way you treat the women in the plant. Just because they can't speak English does not mean you guys can violate their First Amendment rights and every other rights they have. So we're going to fix that and more to come.
They charge us money for our check stubs. They charge us money to get copies of anything in HR. You know, $5 here, $15 here. And it's not right, you know, to get a pair of safety glasses, they charge us $5. To get a pair of sleeves, you got to pay $10. To get a forklift key, they charge you $25. And it ain't right, you know.
If it's the radio, $80.
Yeah, radio,
you got $80. The radio, it's $80. And if you go one more, the radio is not even $45.
I don't think it's fair, for real, the way they treating us. You go, you know, you got to bust your ass, and you make 520 hours in 2 months. And you gotta wait 4 extra months to get hired on permanently. Then when you get hired on permanently, your raise is based off of a buddy system. If they like you, you get a reasonable raise. If they don't, they say,
yeah.
And it's not right, man. I think all our people deserve equal amounts. They got us working 11 hours a day, 7 days a week, with no off days. You call in, they want to give you points and make you bring in doctor's excuses, and it's not right. We slaves. That's why we on strike, man. We gotta stand our grounds. We gotta get what we deserve, not what we want or need. It's what we deserve. We deserve to be making what everybody else making. We doing the same amount of work, if not more, you feel me? We doing 2 and 3 people's jobs and we only getting $12 an hour. That ain't right. They call, like, when they short people, when they inventory go low, they wanna call 12 hours the same day. You know, they don't give us no advance. No time in advance or nothing to tell you you're working 12 days. And then if you got to go home early, they want to give you a point here, a point there. And then next thing you know, we're supposed to get verbal warnings when it comes to points. They kick us out the door at 5 points. When we get 10 points, they treat us like, shit, we slaves. Like, we come here and work for free. They want this shit ran off of what they think it is, but in reality, we can't run it like that. So, shit, I think it's time we stand our ground.
They treat us like slaves too.
Yeah, you don't understand.
So, that's a long time. This is the union that just come right now. If you talk about the union, they used to be they fired because they know what they don't do right. If you talk about the union, this guy, he got this wrong. For any reason, they fire him because they know they don't do right. Because the more population people is African, they take advantage of them. Right now, we got more people, more educated people. They know they come up there, they discuss, this company, the union. So everybody will make more work. We hired, make sign people. Our friend, hey, man, don't see the supervisor. I give his paper, you gotta sign. We sign, that's why. We hired it. After that, they know everything, know about this one. The manager comes down, hey, we gotta accept union. They accept union, but they don't accept the price. So that means it's nothing.
Right.
If they don't pay us, what the union means? Nothing. This company's that's what I can say. I'm sorry for my language.
Oh, that's all right.
They treat us like trash. We're not going to take any more.
Yeah,
we need our right. That's all. Who make American car? And who make $12 an hour? I never heard that.
Tell me what y'all told me before about the scabs and what they said they were going to pay them and what they actually paid them.
Oh, they told them, they text them for the team service, everything. Hey, we're going to pay you $15 into the truck. But these guys, this Friday, they got to pay. They didn't pay double Sunday. They pay them $12. Everybody's screaming, everything.
Everybody's
but they can't do nothing because
they're
tamed, you know?
Yeah.
They don't have rights. If they say something, they're going to fire them. But if they fire me, I'm going to sue the company because I don't do nothing wrong. I'm just stand up for my right. This brother inside is my brothers too. I got to fight for them.
Yeah.
They don't have right, I have right. I have to fight for them too. So you don't have to lie to employee. Because you don't sign the paper, that means you can do whatever you want. You can't.
They don't got to treat those temps like that. You know, get their hopes up and tell them, we'll give you 15 if you work while they on strike. And once we go on strike, they were supposed to be making $15 an hour. But to get your paycheck and see you only making $12, I'd be frustrated too. You feel me? They work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And they even told them, hey, you can work 15 and 16 hours a day. But if you only pay me 12, I'm going to leave at my regular shift too. You feel me?
If you go leave a regular shift, they're going to fire you. You know that. So right now it's 10. Do you know what they're gonna tell them? Couple people they cross the line, yeah? oh, they don't trick more people, they don't go to outside. That's why we got to pay $12. You know, they take advantage of the people. The people, they don't realize it. If you, we told them that came even, hey, come and the union, they can protect you. Instead, they said, hey, if you don't show up, you can get fired because you came. But they don't know, because I told you early, the more publishing from Africa, people, they don't know how union work.
Right.
That's the issue. I know how I worked more than 9 years with the union. I know how union works. I know union fight with the job. But these people, they never be in union. That's a problem.
I've missed one night ever since I've been out here, and every single night I've been hugged, they have cried, they have thanked me, and it makes you feel small. It makes you feel like you need to do more for labor and for the people around you.
It makes you appreciate what you got.
It makes you appreciate what you have. Also, yes.
It's not just labor, it's civil rights.
Right.
Because it's not like they're going there and it's a bunch of majority people that they're trying to push out. It's always the folks that come from Burma or somewhere else.
Yeah,
they're
the
trying
fringes.
To push out of the ones that this is it. They really don't have much option. They're kind of pushing back against the wall.
Yeah, they're pushing the fringes of our society down. And the more you push something down, the more stuff gets pushed down. And the UAW and unions in general stop that.
But we see the scabs coming in, right?
Yeah.
But we see the scabs coming in and we yell and everything else. The thing that's pushing them out is they've already said it when they were coming in. They're treating them worse and worse. Instead of trying to treat them better and keep them in there, they're going to be coming out here.
Yeah, every day.
And that's, management can't help it. They can't help but try to push and prod and pull and control. People understand it more when they see it. You know what I mean?
And without a voice in that workplace, without somebody to stick up for them, they're going to get mistreated. They're going to get hurt. And there's no recompense. There's no recourse.
Are these scabs that are actual employees here, or are they like
day
labor?
They're being brought in. And okay. Some... Well,
some are scabs, some are temps.
That one car pulled up here. Two guys hopped out, one to the picket line. One guy just walked straight in.
Yeah, and it's like that too. Some people can't survive.
Some people, I mean, and some people you got to understand. They're trying to feed, but they don't understand. We're out here walking for this. We're out here walking to make everybody
down on that.
You know, and it's not just about money.
He's out here on the line in his roommate's.
It's about a fair place.
But I mean, that's what it's like. You know. People, it's. I don't want to say civil war of our culture, but it basically is. You've got the laborer, and you've got to survive. And some people believe in the cause. Your brother can believe in the cause, and your sister can, you know, not. But at the end of the day, we have to help. And you just can't sit back.
And everybody thinks it's all about money. It's all about. It's about equity. You know, these guys make money hand over fist. They're driving nice cars, new cars, right up to the lot. And then you see the workers, and they're driving beat up cars. They got stuff taped together. And I mean, I understand they're trying to make money, but we're trying to do what we can to help them.
Yeah, they're trying to make a living. We're trying to make them alive.
Exactly.
And that's what it is. I mean, how pitiable are we as a nation who need people to starve so we can afford something for cheap?
Are you ready?
Yes.
I
can't see you.
Yeah, I'm black. You gotta turn your flash on.
Well, the lighting is terrible.
You gotta have to turn your flash on.
Hold on. Yeah, there we go.
I work at Challenge. I've been working here for a year now. They treat us like a piece of shit, man. Like, we don't got no respect in here. They pay us good for nothing, for real. We just want a fair contract. We want fair health care and everything, you know. We want equal opportunity as our plants in St. Louis and Texas. What they get is what we, same thing we doing down here, but they want to pay us less. I don't think it's fair. And we're going to be out here until we get our fair contract. We ain't going back in there. So
I'm coming for a challenge. I was employee for almost 1 year. But what I'm fighting is to get my wage, everything, my right. They was treating us in a bad way since like we start over there. We had a lot of things issue, but we support UAW every time, and we need a contract right away. Thanks.
Thank you, brother.
How they treat me, I don't want the next person to treat me like me. I hope they treat him better than me. That's why I'm fighting for next person come behind me, you know?
Yeah.
That's all I need.
who may not benefit right now, but the next person, I mean, the next person can benefit, they're going to be there, yeah, and somebody did it for us, you know, that's what we want to do. We just want to do it for the person that's going to come after us. It don't matter if it's us, I mean, just the next person, you know, because everything that happened in there, shit, you don't walk in and explain that. I mean, you got to go and see it for yourself. You got to go see the job that was doing in there. I mean, we get like 700-800 parts per night. I mean, yeah. I mean, we got like schedule that we can't control. Sometimes we go home 3, sometimes we go home 5. All depends on the inventory, you know what I'm saying? Like, if the inventory is large, they say go home. If the inventory is low, they say 5:30. How you going to tell me that if I'm taking a ride from somebody? How can I do that? I stuck up. I mean, we're doing all the hours, but we ain't getting all the money, you know what I'm saying? People up there be like, oh yeah, y'all got all the money because they're working a lot of hours. No, it's not like that. We're just making part for the people, but we ain't getting none in return.
To let them know that they don't got to get treated the way that they try to treat them. You know, they deserve to be treated like humans. Like St. Louis in Texas, they, you know, they had to get out here and fight for what they wanted as well. You know, striking a week at a time, and that's what we're going to do. If it take us 3 months, we're not going to walk past this picket line until we get what we deserve.
We're never going to cross the line.
Our loyalty lies out here with UAW.
They're not supposed to have hope for that. We're never going to cross the line until we get what we want.
Solidarity. UAW forever. UAW strong. Be out here in force tomorrow with the electricians, carpenters, several other unions.
I'm live here at Challenge Manufacturing. They manufacture parts for the GM automobiles, floor pans, and other welded parts. I'm part of the UAW contingent and the union workers contingent that is out here in support union. And all we want and all our bargainers want for these employees is fair treatment. There's other plants around the country that basically supply the same parts, basically do the same thing as this plant here in Kansas City does, and they're paying their employees $3 more an hour at those plants. This plant became union, and 98% of the workforce voted to become union. The company obviously did not like that. This company, when the union workers went on strike, brought in scab workers for the $15 an hour that they're paying the other companies' employees around the country, and they're busing them in from Michigan, putting them up in hotels around the city, and busing them to work.
So you're out here on strike. You're a worker here.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Local 710, trying to get our first contract here with Challenge Manufacturing, but it's ruthless because it's corporate greed is what it is, and we're just trying to fight to get a fair wage, better benefits than what we already have, which isn't much at all to begin with. Went on strike, 8 days now, losing my voice, getting it back. But we're standing out here and fighting for our rights. It's American way. UAW strong, all the way.
There comes the po-po.
Clear the driveway. Stay on the sidewalks.
Hold on, my kids are down there. I'm going this way.
Okay, go that way.
Step it up.
The starters!
Who are we?
UAW!
Who are they?
Scabs!
Who are we?
UAW! Scabs!
Well, hey, we're not clear, sir. We protest.
We're not going anywhere, sir. We're not going nowhere. We're not going nowhere, and your bullying us is not going to help you. All right? We got KCMO here, and they're here to protect us, sir. You're here to do a good job protecting the company. Hey, hey, do not hit them. We're picketing, sir. We're picketing.
Pepper spray is getting shook.
One guy in front of him, and he goes, "Don't surround me."
What a coward!
I'm trying to instigate the fight.
Scab coming out.
We've been letting cars in and out, sir. Don't believe it. They just got here. Now they want to interrupt our process.
Yeah, I thought you
meant
me.
They're the ones.
Yeah, hey Eric, let that car through. Well,
this guy's a real cop. Yeah, airport.
We got the real cops here now. Babbitt, you're a bully, Babbitt.
You're a bully, Babbitt.
Pull a weapon on non-armed people. You're a coward, Babbitt.
Hey.
Oh, Lord, no cop.
Oh, that man, they about pulled pepper spray. The dude was shaking the pepper spray, threatening people with it.
Who's there for police?
Stab!
Who are we?
You ain't got you!
You
We're not back in the
We got bail! We got bail!
We got bail! We got bail! We got bail!
Track!
You ain't got you!
What do we want?
What brought you out on strike, sir? You're a worker here at this plant?
Yeah, I am. My name is William Jensen, and I work at Challenge. I've been employed about 3 months now. And the working condition and the salaries are the one that brought us out here today. They tell you anything they want to tell you. They treat you anyhow they want to treat you. And you don't have anybody to report to. Okay, so they agree that the Challenge management agree that the workers could unionize. And in the process, we sign in for the union to come in. When the union came in, they asked for some benefits. And they wanted to upgrade our salaries, and management said they can't make it. Yeah, they do not agree. So union asked them, can we ask our members to go on strike? And they said, yes, they gave us the right. We went and voted so that we could strike. They gave us the time. We went. And here we are today, looking for that better judgment. Yes.
All right, so what happened to you on the picket line?
I was walking, and I was getting my camera out, and this lady drove up, hit me with her car, and then someone from the back seat threw a potato and hit me in the face.
So you got hit by a potato on the picket line.
I got hit in the face with a potato.
And that scab could apparently accurately throw a potato.
You know, they probably have a better job somewhere else that involves throwing.
Parking lot is empty. I was talking to the guys that work here. They say that right now, 2:30 was supposed to be a break. And instead, it was like everyone just got in their cars and slimed on out. They said they think they're out of parts and they know a couple machines are down.
Great news in regards to the UAW Local Union 710 strike here in Kansas City. The workers won their first contract. This contract will cover the workers for 4 years and includes a guaranteed 4 hours pay for any workers called in on their day off and spells out exactly how long and how often their lunch and other breaks shall be. It addresses the speed-up problems facing many of the workers there and establishes a seniority system for workers to bid on promotions. It standardizes the pay for specific job titles in order to address the rampant favoritism and unfair assignments of pay rates and raises that many workers complained about. It provides a printer and a computer with access to the ADP system so that workers can view and make copies of their pay stubs. Perhaps the most impressive provisions are the $1,500 bonuses to workers upon ratification of the contract and a staggering 12 named paid holidays. I'm a little jealous of that one. The contract was passed with only one vote against. Congratulations, fellow workers, and welcome to our family. I'm so proud of you. Get up, stand up, and solidarity forever.
Thank you for tuning in this evening to KKFI 90.1. You're listening to the Heartland Labor Forum. I am Ariana Eckel. If you enjoyed this evening's show, you can check out the podcast later on heartlandlaborforum.org. But you can also find out more about this specific story by going to YouTube and looking up Striking in the Era of Trump, Midwestern Solidarity. It is an hour and a half documentary about this strike. Have a great evening, fellow workers.
Girls, would you care to scream for the Beatles, please?
Join us on Friday, April 21st at 8 p.m. at Knuckleheads for an evening with the music of the Beatles, featuring members of Liverpool, the Rainmakers, the Quivers, Broken Arrows, Potter's Field, and Fortnite with special guest Bass Johnny Ricker. This show is a benefit for KKFI. Tickets available at kkfi.org/events, and a splendid time is guaranteed for all.
When you gotta go, you gotta go. They say nothing is certain but death and taxes. It turns out that listening to shots in the night is also certain to tickle your funny bone. That's death and taxes on the next Shots in the Night, Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
You are listening to the Heartland Labor Forum. I am Jen Zaman, your engineer, and starting off our second segment this evening is a song by Namoli Brennett called Thorn in Your Side.
Hi, this is Judy Ansel. For 5 years in the late 1970s and early 80s, I worked in a factory where I was first an assembler and then a machinist with the job of cutting metal parts to exact specifications. The shop I worked in had about 300 workers, but only a handful of us were women. Sex discrimination and sexual harassment were rampant. But so many times, when you're a victim of it and an isolated woman worker, you ask yourself, is it something I did? Or maybe Charlie can do this job better than me, just like they're saying. You doubted yourself. You wondered if you were imagining things and always feared retaliation if you said anything. If you were lucky enough to have a decent union, as I was, you could eventually get some justice. Such scenarios go on today, even though we're much more conscious of our rights and there's stronger public opinion on our side. Still, women are constantly told that they're overreacting or just plain crazy. So, today, I'm happy to report, sisters, that you're not crazy. With me in the studio is the definitive proof that the discrimination women in majority male workplaces experience is real. With us is Una Noling, engineer at Black & Veatch. Una got her job when she was a man. Since then, she's transitioned and identifies as female. And does she have a story about how her fellow engineers and others she works with reacted? Welcome to the show, Una.
Thank you very much for having me, Judy.
Tell me, first off, a little bit about the terminology of transgender and all. Educate us.
Okay. Certainly. Transgender is an umbrella term that generally encompasses someone who lives outside the traditional gender boundaries that would be defined by their, you know, birth sex. We like to say at the Transgender Institute where I work, sex is what's between your legs, gender is what's between your ears. So someone who does not fit into conventional roles or who has to transition from one side to the other is called transgender as a general umbrella term. A transsexual person is a person who undergoes medical treatment to complete their transition. This involves hormone therapy. This involves surgery. This involves, of course, a legal and social transition. There are many aspects to it that all start, of course, with having a good set of counseling and therapy to make sure that this is the right path for you. So I have been through that transition, and I am technically a transsexual woman.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. That actually was really clear. It helps a lot. You have the same job you had before you transitioned. Tell us about your job and what your responsibilities are.
My job title is I'm the technology lead for fuels at Black & Veatch. Some people say that means I'm in charge of things that burn other things. I primarily work with coal power plants as well as bioenergy plants and other facilities, advising them on different fuels to burn, on economics, on everything, and everything from mechanical issues to social and legal issues. I've been working there for a total of 24 years, about 19 years presenting as male and 5 years as a woman. I came out at work in 2012 and completed my legal and social transition very early in 2013. And I've held the same job since. And one of the things that's a little different about my job is my coworkers, they were shocked. They were a little confused. They didn't really understand at first, but they rallied behind me. My coworkers, my management, human resources, all the way up to the CEO himself told me that they were proud of me. They backed me and supported me. This makes Black & Veatch a very standout company in many ways. And I was surprised because the norm for people like me is unemployment. The norm is underemployment and ostracism. So not only that, but I directly face clients throughout the power industry. So not only did I have to come out to all my coworkers, I had to come out to about 100 different clients around the world. And I had complete acceptance, which again, just absolutely floored me.
So, and you go, tell us some of the countries you go to engineer projects.
Last year I was in China, Thailand, and India. I've been going back and forth to Canada quite a bit. I work in the UK and the European Community. Most of my work is in the United States, but I do travel around the world for my work. I'm out and proud everywhere I go. I don't wear a pin on my, you know, skirt suit that says, "Kiss me, I'm trans." But if sometimes a client or someone comes up hesitantly and says, "Yeah, I put you into Google and I read some things," and I'll say, "Oh, about my being transgender. Do you have any questions?" And typically they do have some very polite questions, and they're curious, and I do my best to educate.
Great. That's encouraging. But you did run into a number of problems, right?
There were many things. Because I'm an engineer, I planned my transition for about a year. I had spreadsheets. I had a Microsoft project set up of what I was going to do. I had PowerPoints. But there were many things that I could not have anticipated about what it was like to be a woman in the workplace, because I had not walked their walk. I may have been a woman internally, but I was not presenting as such. And even though I thought that I was aware of how women are really treated in the workplace, I found out that I had a lot to learn. For instance, at my very first technical conference I went to, where I was presenting a paper, I walked onto the trade floor and stopped to look at a motorcycle they were giving away. Within 30 seconds, a large man walked up next to me, put his arm around my shoulders, and hugged me to his side and said, "I'll bet you'd look really sexy straddling that motorcycle."
Oh my gosh.
I was on the floor for 30 seconds and absolutely stunned. It was as I walked around the trade floor, as the old me, I was used to people, you know, coming to attention. I was a potential sale. I was a customer. I worked for a big global engineering firm that buys products. Instead, I had people asking me, "Am I a booth babe? What booth am I working at this year? What am I doing for lunch?" After the first 2 hours on the trade floor, instead of walking away with a bunch of literature and potential contacts, I had something like 6 invitations for dinner dates.
Just so we deal with any doubts people have, what were you wearing when you did this?
I was wearing a skirt suit, knee length, full jacket, very formal. I was doing a presentation.
It wasn't like you were presenting yourself as a, quote, babe or anything like that.
No, not at all. I was wearing what I call my CEO suit, which is my very best pinstripe skirt suit. And it was
okay, so it's not what we wear, girls, right?
No, it was there was no, you know, stockings showing or anything like that. It was just normal business wear.
Normal business wear. Nobody would assume that you'd be an engineer because you were now female.
They evidently thought that it was at least unlikely I was an engineer. But yeah, they didn't. They just really couldn't conceive it. It was not their first expectation when I walked up. And it continued on at other trade shows. After a while, I think they've started to recognize my face and they know me better. But it really is the first reaction of people. And they're always shocked, too. If I tell people on an airplane I'm an engineer, they're like, oh, really? You know, oh, sure you are. And then I have to prove it to them. And the proving myself was something that I never anticipated I was going to happen. I know my business. I'm one of the best people in the world at the tiny little thing that I do. And I'm used to walking into boardrooms, walking in to talk to clients, and they listen to me, they ask questions, they nitpick things, but I'm treated with respect. As soon as I started presenting as a woman, I had to prove myself every time I walked into the room. Clients would start talking to my assistants. I know one time I gave a presentation to a client and laid out the perfect solution for them. I thought it was rather brilliant. It was something no one else could do. And the client smiled and nodded his head and turned to my assistant, who was 6 months out of K-State, and says, is this right, what she's telling us?
Oh, my gosh.
Because he was a man.
I mean, I can really identify with that, because I know when I'm in a room with mostly men, even sometimes women, and I have expertise in something, they will always turn to a man who's there rather than ask me about it. And you constantly feel like you have to prove yourself. You have to say something really brilliant in order to even get their attention. Otherwise, they're just going to ignore you.
That's absolutely it. You have to almost give part of your resume. You have to find ways to deftly slip it into the conversation. You know, talk about I have a master's degree in engineering, so I will find a way to throw that out there to let them know. No, right. I do have education in this. I talk about the number of projects I've managed. I'd never had to do any of this before. It was always there was an assumption of importance and expertise when I walked in the room, and that vanished when I became a woman.
Did it make you regret it?
Never.
Never.
It was a very sobering thing as it accumulated. I hope it made me wiser. No, I never regretted anything, even the sexual harassment. I've been sexually harassed, as in hands on my body, 9 times in 5 years. The latest time was on a flight from a work site. I was actually going across country, where a man sexually assaulted me on
a
plane.
On a plane?
For about 2 hours.
What, he was all hands or what?
He was hands on me. He grabbed me. He groped me. He even licked me.
Did you report? Licked you?
Yes.
Did you report this to the flight attendant?
I reported it to the gate agents as soon as I got off the plane. They said, oh, how terrible, and went back to talking about Christmas plans. I filed a police report. It went to the FBI. Nothing's happened.
You kept telling this man that his advances were unwelcome, right?
I did, but he also started to threaten me. He and I was terrified, and I didn't I didn't know what to do. And it just, that was another thing too, because I had not grown up with socialization as a woman. I never tell anyone I've had a full female experience. Obviously I haven't, but I did not grow up
being
learning,
socialized like a woman's supposed to.
Yes, to learn the techniques to try to put the men off, to try to keep them from doing this, to try to derail this. And maybe that wouldn't have worked, because obviously it doesn't work for everyone.
Was this guy drunk?
No.
Wow.
And
if you had alerted the flight attendant?
I rang for the flight attendants. They wouldn't come. They really? Just, it's a typical modern-day flight. Nobody cares. They sit up front. They don't come back when you ring. And so the whole flight, I had rang the bell and they ignored it.
Wow. So tell me, are there other stories you have about how people reacted, or other interesting things that you want to share?
There's so many subtleties about gender in the workplace that I don't think we recognize. Not all these differences are bad. Some of them are, and some of them lead to discrimination. There are differences in the way you communicate interpersonally. You know, it's women stand a different distance away from men when they are communicating with them. Women have different behaviors, we all fidget while we talk to other people. One time I was standing there talking to a senior engineer, and I was playing with my hair, because my hair had started to grow out for the first time in my life. It was getting long, and I was playing with my hair while I was talking to him. And when he left, my secretary kind of exploded from behind her desk, came over and said, why were you flirting with that man? And I was stunned and said, What do you mean? I wasn't flirting with us. You were playing with your hair while you were talking to him, and you were standing too close.
And you don't know the code signals.
And I didn't know that. And I said, oh, my God. And she said, yeah, I could tell. You know, he was wondering what was going on. And I also found out things are much more expensive. I mean, studies done in New York City have found out if a woman brings in a man's button-down shirt for dry cleaning, she would be charged $5 to clean it. But if an hour later a man brings in that same exact shirt, he would be charged $3 to clean it. You know, haircuts are very different. Yeah. I generally get just a very light trim for my hair, and my barber was charging me, she was a hairstylist, $15. And when I came out to her and said I wanted the same haircut because I wasn't out yet fully at work, she said, oh, great, now I can give you a woman's haircut. And she charged me $75 for the same thing.
You got ripped off.
I know I did.
Yeah.
But it was early.
Huh. Interesting. And clothes, of course, are much more expensive for women, right?
Yes, clothes are more expensive. And, you know, as a guy, I had three pairs of shoes. I had a few suits. And you know, it just wasn't that big of a deal. Now you are expected to have more variety in your dress, especially if you want to dress professionally. Uh-huh. Although one thing I really love is that I can wear anything I want to now because there's no inherent homosexuality in the dress. You know, what do men wear in the professional workplace? They wear khakis, they wear their browns, they wear their blacks.
Right.
Maybe they can get away with powder blue if they're a little bit edgy. But I can wear anything I want to, and no one thinks that I'm a lesbian because I wear a pink skirt, even though I am a lesbian. But
great. So what about facilities in the workplace? Since, you know, engineers are expected to be men, do you run into a lot of problems where you know, like there's no bathrooms or, you know, like there's other things like socializing with the mm-hmm. You know, honchos and stuff like that, where you're at a disadvantage?
Black and Veatch is a very equality-oriented organization, and that makes the bathroom situation interesting. The men's bathrooms are always very crowded. Sometimes it was standing room only.
Oh, now women, you got your own, right?
Yeah, now many times I walk to the women's bathroom and it's dark because no one's been in there so long, the lights have shut off automatically. At power plants, however, you do find that women's facilities are sometimes a little bit of a walk. At one power plant, the women's bathroom was a porta potty outside in January.
Oh,
and in case you're wondering, yes, that stuff down there can freeze solid.
This makes me think of that movie North Country about the taconite miner, a woman, and the porta potty. If you've never seen it,
I haven't.
You really should watch it. It's about sex discrimination of women miners against women miners who were, you know, unique at a particular time. So tell me, there must be a lot of lessons that not only you have learned, but the rest of us can learn, and especially companies and people who are training engineers and professionals in fields where there's mostly men. What should we be doing different so that other folks, well, women in general, don't have to go through this?
I think the best way to implement a full set of equality and supported diversity in workplaces to lead from the top. I found that companies where they send a strong message right from the top, we embrace diversity, we want our people to be treated equal and with equal dignity and respect. When that comes from the top and when they're out and proud about it, you know, when it's on highlighted on their website, we support diversity, we support inclusion. When they highlight female engineers on their website and it's not just all, you know, a sausage fest, as they say, of male face after male face. My company's very good about that. Even for a while, we had almost half of the members of our board of directors were women. So we really do stand out as an outlier in that area. Leading from the top is most important because when people see that strong message of tolerance and acceptance and equality, it really does trickle down in this case.
And what about the information that your fellow workers need to have specifically about people who are transsexual or transgender?
Most of the information is best coming from the person who's transitioning, unless you have a really experienced HR team that can handle it. I was the first case my HR team had ever handled, so it was on me to provide a lot of information out there for my coworkers and to educate them and to do it in a very positive manner and not take offense at some dumb or possibly offensive questions. Mm-hmm. There are resources in the area of people who will volunteer, like myself, to come and help work with your HR people to help them accommodate a transitioning employee.
Okay, great. Well, we've been talking to Una Noling. Una is somebody who is a transsexual. And you also have a radio show here on KKFI. What is it?
Yes, I host the Trans Talk edition of The 10th Voice, along with my wife, Fiona Nowling, and we broadcast every fourth Saturday at 1 p.m. here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio.
So that would be this afternoon because we're taping on Saturday. Well, good luck with your show, and thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Thank you very much.
Working at this job is dirty and dangerous, and I'm taking risks anyway. Oh, if I had the time and the proper equipment, I could do my job safely each day. Everybody here says they're sticklers for safety, and I'm not here to say that they lie. I'm saying we just come to work here. We don't come to die.
Hello. This is Mary Ariel for Safety First. First, inside Alabama's auto jobs boom. Cheap wages, crushed limbs. From www.bloomberg.com, Peter Wallman for March 23rd. The South's manufacturing renaissance comes with a heavy price. Regina Elsia was 1 year old in 1997 when the first vehicle rolled off the Mercedes-Benz assembly line in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. The nation's fifth poorest state had wagered $250 million in tax breaks and other public giveaways to land the first major Mercedes factory outside Germany. Toyota, Honda, and Hyundai followed with Alabama plants of their own. The auto parts makers came next. Elsia went to work in February 2016 at Agen USA in Coosetta, Alabama, a South Korean supplier of auto parts for Hyundai and Kia. Her mother warned her against it. She'd worked at two other parts suppliers in the area and found the pace and pressure unbearable. Elsia was 20 and not easily deterred, and she and her boyfriend had gotten engaged. She worked 12-hour shifts 7 days a week, hoping to move from temporary status to full-time, which would raise her wage from $8.75 an hour to $10.50. College can wait, she told her mom and stepdad. On June 18, 2016, Elsia was working the day shift when a computer flashed fault on robot 23. Bolts often got stuck in that machine. Elsia was at the adjacent workstation when the assembly line stopped. Her teammate called maintenance to clear the fault, but no one showed up. After several minutes, Elsia grabbed a tool and entered the screened-off area around the robot to clear the fault herself. Robot 23 surged back to life, crushing Elsia against the steel dashboard frame and impaling her upper body with a pair of welding tips. The rescue workers finally did what Elsia failed to do, lock out the machine's emergency power switch so it couldn't re-energize again. Agen, according to OSHA, had never given the workers their own safety locks and training them on how to use them, required by federal law. Agen is contesting. Elsia died the next day. Agen sent a single artificial flower to her funeral. I recommend you check out the entire story at www.bloomberg.com. Next, new employees among the dead in St. Louis boiler explosion. From the St. Louis Post-Dispatch at www.stltoday.com for April 4th. Three brand new hires at a South St. Louis linen laundering company were filling out paperwork in the office Monday morning, April 2nd, when a boiler launched by an explosion at a nearby factory crashed through the roof, killing two of them and critically injuring the third. The initial explosion at about 7:30 a.m. in the Soulard neighborhood killed one person at Loylange Box Company and shot the boiler into the air. It flew about 500 feet before crashing into the offices at Faultless Healthcare Linen. Fire investigators and OSHA will be reviewing records to see whether the boiler had been properly maintained. Missouri issues certificates of boiler inspection, but the city of St. Louis is exempt from this requirement. Instead, the city requires that every company with a boiler have a licensed engineer on duty whenever a boiler is in operation. Police identified one of those killed as Kenneth Trentham, one of the licensed engineers at Loylange. Safety First will be following up. Finally, overturned OSHA rule missed opportunity to protect workers from EHSToday.com for March 30th. On March 22nd, the U.S. Senate passed H.J. Resolution 83 along party lines, which used the Congressional Review Act to permanently overturn an OSHA final rule that stated the agency could cite employers for record-keeping violations that occurred during the 5 years before the date of the OSHA inspection. Legislators argued, according to the 2012 Volks legal decision, that while the Occupational Safety and Health Act requires employers to record and maintain a log of workplace injuries and illnesses for 5 years, they only could be cited for record-keeping violations that occurred within the 6 months of inspection. In an open letter to President Trump last month, former OSHA Director Dr. David Michaels noted that OSHA critics have claimed that this new regulation is burdensome to employers. They are wrong and they know it. The requirement to record every injury and maintain the log for 5 years has not changed. The new rule only changes OSHA's ability to enforce the law. If OSHA is handcuffed and not allowed to penalize employers who deliberately undercount their injuries, all employers will be pressured to undercount. President Trump signed the repeal on April 4th. This is Mary Ario for Safety First.
And this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar for this week. We have the People's Climate Movement Rally, which is going to be Saturday, April 29th from 1 to 3 p.m. at Washington Square Park, Pershing and Grand in Kansas City, Missouri. It is sponsored by the Sierra Club, among others. And then there will be a May Day strike and rally, and stay tuned for the details. Those will be announced soon. And we'll see, Research Professionals LLC is in need of 24 jurors to hear and deliberate over the facts of an upcoming jury trial. We will be hosting this event in Independence, Missouri on the square. And that is going to be April 11th, 2017. Session one is from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Session two is 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. It's at the Corporate Professional Building, 221 West Lexington, Suite 200 in Independence, Missouri. And you can check out the Heartland Labor Forum calendar and schedule on the web at heartlandlaborforum.org, where you can also listen to today's show. Next week on the Heartland Labor Forum, tradeswomen building bridges to India and kids march for one race, human race. I've been your engineer and host, Jen Zaman.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.